Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Christmas, Mr. Oh, sorry. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter. It's helpful if I wait till my mic is on before I start to talk. It's a terrible thing. You know, you get these habits in old age, and you don't want to be premature in any way. And by the way, get your mind out of the gutter. Mitch Hanks here in the Mitch Hanks Show. To my left, to your right, Mike Michelson, a veteran staffer, chief of staff for Senator Stephen Nahas of Whitewater. And you're hot. The Republicans and Democrats are going to go to war again here on this Hatfields and McCoys. Am I right about the John Doe?
Yeah, the abusive, nearly criminal, if not criminal, conduct of former GAB staff during the 2011-12-13 era, which is key. Because remember, Mitch, what we're really talking about here, this all goes back to one thing, Act 10 and the hatred of liberals of Scott Walker. And to the point where
there was
even today, we are still trying to criminalize being a Republican in this state because of Act 10.
Well, Act 10 did touch a nerve, Mike, with a lot of people.
You know what I say? Get over it. Because here's the problem. Whether you're conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat, any government entity that without your knowledge grabs 500,000
emails. How do you grab that many emails? How is that possible?
1 million pages of people's personal communications, nothing to do with the investigation, almost entirely purely personal.
Now, 1 million pages, but so other pages?
No, 500,000 individual emails and chats, but those totaled, when you print all that out, it would be a million pages.
Oh, chats, yeah. Plus, they have bank records, right?
Bank records, personal computers. There were wiretaps. Wiretap. So there's audio recordings for something that no one. Now, again, John Doe 1. Remember, Scott Walker asked for John Doe 1. That dealt with some people in Milwaukee County government who stole money and did some other things.
Right.
But John Doe 2 and John Doe 3, which was the GAB investigation where this was just uncovered recently by DOJ, all of that was because of Act 10. All of it started after Act 10. And all of it moved forward because of a couple of very partisan hacks that worked at the government accountability board.
Now, they say, as you know, Mike, that they were simply following the lead of the law enforcement people, the judges, the DAs, and they were just carrying out their paperwork, so to speak, because they can't do subpoenas or didn't. And you say what to that?
Bull. Several judges told them to stop. Judge Peterson squashed the subpoenas. A federal court ruled that what they were doing was inappropriate. The state Supreme Court said what you're doing is inappropriate. Stop. Nothing illegal here. The U.S. Supreme Court refused to take up their case because there was nothing there. So, again, what we have here, Mitch, is one of the largest spying operations in the history of the state of Wisconsin.
So we have a big file. What we have.
Now, if this were a bunch of Republicans, Republican DAs and Republicans that had done this to Democrats, our good friends in the liberal media, I mean, the Cap Times, Nichols and Zweifel would have lost all of their hair by now because they would have been pulling it
Zweifel's
out.
Well, Zweifel's lost quite a bit of it
he
anyway.
He has lost, but he's still got quite a bit for his age.
Yeah,
I give him credit.
A bit. No, that's very true. And we've heard from Matt Rothschild. And I'm working on my own story, but one side says, oh, no, they were just looking after the violation of the law against coordinating with outside groups for campaign and fundraising and all that. But you know what? No court ever ruled on that, the merits of that old statute. And the only judges
They did. The state Supreme Court ruled there was no violation.
I meant no court ever ruled that it was a law that was violated.
Correct.
The only judges who ruled said that nobody violated it.
Correct.
That it was never violated. So,
but early on in the process, Judge Peterson, one of the John Does, there was a lengthy list of John Doe judges. He looked at the past subpoenas and said the documents that were used to support the subpoenas
were
faulty. Nothing there. He squashed them.
He squashed them all, yeah.
But even after he squashed them, what we saw were GAB staff continuing to go through these files, sorting them. Explain to me why 150 pages of emails between Senator Vukmir and her daughter about health
or
issues.
Or Vicki McKenna,
was
the radio
out.
Host, or, you know.
Why did investigators need to know who was talking to Mark Belling, who was talking to Vicki McKenna, and who was talking to Charlie Sykes? This was opposition research, as they labeled the files.
And even if they say it was a referral from the DA, what authority does the DA have to get them involved in a criminal investigation?
None. And then they turn, and then, you know, both sides are, he's trying, the Milwaukee County DA has not answered why they had access to all of these additional
records.
Right, he
won't answer, right?
Not,
because
no.
Secrecy order. Who could lift that? A judge, right?
Only a judge. But again, we are going to get more information because the Senate Organization Committee, will vote tomorrow to extend the criminal or the investigation under state statute. The legislature can call on the Department of Justice to investigate wrongdoing in government. They will be doing that tomorrow to extend the investigation of the activities of the GAB and their staff during 2011, 12, and 13.
Well, the GAB board, as I understand it, voted to launch this investigation into campaigning on state time between they made
what is known as John Doe 3.
John Doe, December of 2011, all the way to March of 13. But again, they were using information from the criminal investigation, which is John Doe, and so they can't do a criminal investigation, so I'm a little confused.
They shouldn't have had access to records taken as part of subpoenas for a criminal investigation.
That should have stayed in the
they never had any authority.
So that should have stayed in the respective counties, correct?
Yes, that's correct. But what we do know, Mitch, is that all of the documents that The Guardian got were only housed in one
newspaper,
place.
The American
The Leak
Vision edition of the British newspaper, The Guardian.
Leaked just weeks before the United States Supreme Court was set to rule against the John Doe folks as their appeal.
And not taking the case.
Right. They were attempting to spike the case, trying to put pressure on the U.S. Supreme Court to say there is something here. That material was leaked. The Department of Justice has concluded that there was only one place where all of these documents, and in particular 12 in that file, were created in only one place, mm-hmm. and that was the Government Accountability Board by Shane Falk.
Shane Falk was a counsel for the GAB, who's no longer there and no longer at his previous law firm. So, and of course, he allegedly, according to the DOJ report, he had leaked documents on his hard drive.
That's their allegation, but as they said, they could not prove it in a criminal court beyond a reasonable doubt.
The hard drive is missing, right? I mean, that's part of the deal. But the staff made paper copies, though.
But at a minimum, we know that Shane Falk ordered his assistant, even after being told by judges to stop sorting, to stop going through the files,
right.
even after being ordered by his colleague, the special prosecutor, Franz Schmitz.
Well, he sent him two emails and said,
it took a second email to get them to stop, even after they were collating, sorting, and then, believe it or not,
would
creating.
You say collating?
They were literally collating and going through
like
and identifying things that they called gold, embarrassing things
gold
on Republicans.
Stuff. Yeah, right. Gold. Kind of reminds me of Jed Gahuva. J. Edgar Hoover with a bunch of dirt back in the day. Of course, they had plenty of dirt on him.
We now know, Mitch, and so again, we now know because DOJ has had to respond to media, the GAB staff who are speaking anonymously to places like the Wisconsin State Journal, Matt DeFore, with a loaded crap story last Sunday. The DOJ responded this week and released even more information. They are going to have to answer, Mitch, who in the hell who worked for the GAB continued to keep files from the 1990s on complaints?
Is that the DOJ report?
Yes. It's actually also it's in this 10-page response that the DOJ issued this week to the media.
Well, now, where did the 1990s files come from?
Those were supposed to have been destroyed by state law and by records rules. And by the rules.
Why
of
was that in the electronic file opposition research?
You know what that tells us?
Was that in the opposition research
that
file?
That was in, yes. We now know that they were keeping information going back to the 90s.
Hell, I was around after that, Mike. I was around in 2001.
Your file is much larger than a million pages. We could not possibly review all of that.
I mean, Mike, how far are they going to go back on this stuff? Oh, man, that's scary. But
your days at Butler are well covered.
Well, yeah, if we could win a game. No, this is fun. It's like Watergate. It's, you know, our own. I tell you, this John Doe thing has really touched a nerve, hasn't it, Mike?
This is an abuse by government employees. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative. We should all be outraged when any entity in government abuses the power. Here's Mitch. Most people would say, well, the people had a right to fight this. Do you realize that the people who had these documents taken were never told because these were secret John Doe warrants.
Yeah, right.
People didn't know until the DOJ report was
somebody was pouring through their emails for months.
For years. Years.
Or, years. I mean, decades. It went back to the 90s. Somebody say 1990?
Mitch, there were communications that the GAB staff was fingering through.
Isn't that before email was even up and running?
No, it was going. It was, believe me.
1990?
There were husbands and wives who were talking about their wife looking at a dress at a store. Communications, very personal.
Have you been snooping through the emails yourself, Mike, or what's going on there?
Well, there'll be a movie.
I mean, look at this one here.
The DOJ pointed out these were very personal and sensitive materials.
I'm sure they were.
That, again, weren't set aside. The GAB staff were going through them and sorting them by
gold, put the golden stuff here. And then they didn't give the Supreme Court all the stuff when they were ordered to, right? After it ended.
Correct.
They had 30 days and it still stayed in the Ethics
Commission
basement.
This thing supposedly ended in 2015. Mm-hmm. And as of just 3 months ago, they found more records in the basements of the Ethics Commission, going back, I should say, September.
What did they say? They didn't realize they were there. What did they say in the article? I guess we didn't know they were there. It was sealed or
the
something.
The people who said they knew what they were doing and doing it legally now say, oh, but our filing system really sucks.
Yeah. Well, these things happen, right? Mike Michelson, thank you. I knew you'd be
On
it from your team. And, you know, everybody has a team out there, unless you're just wandering aimlessly, muttering under the bridge.
I'm on Team Mitch.
Team Mitch. Well, that's great. Because John Nichols won last week. What's he on? He's on Team John, I think. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Mike.
Mitch.
Take care.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. And we'll come back. Tim Graham, one of my favorites, talking about the coverage of the tax cuts. Then we'll talk to Phil Kirpin. Get your calls. 210-1667, 210-1667. The Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
The all-new Mitch Hank Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hank Show.
So Congress passes the tax cuts, and everybody's upset. The coverage has been pretty negative. And what I said is, can somebody tell me, actually, you tell me right now. I want to get a call on this. Willie or somebody... 210-1667. Can you name one time when they've done federal tax cuts across the board or, you know, substantially multi-level where there's been a reduction or less tax revenue coming in as a result? When did that ever happen? Just give me a call. 210-1667. I don't believe it ever happened. Tim Graham joins me of Newsbusters. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
How are you? And that's the challenge I put to people, if they can ever tell me when that ever happened, where you cut taxes pretty much across the board, and where tax revenue was less after that or was reduced. Can you think of a time?
No, I think what happens, though, is that spending continues to grow.
Correct. It's a spending problem, is my point, yes. You're right. It's spending.
It forever increases.
Correct.
It is one of the most unexplained phenomena of politics. The average person not only thinks that they're getting a tax hike now, which they won't, the average person probably thinks the government's been cut dramatically. They're always being told about drastic spending cuts.
They
have never happened.
Well, it's being reported, even on Fox, it's going to cause a $1.5 trillion deficit. And I think to avoid that, they have to grow at like 0.04 above the current baseline. Which, you know, the baseline.
No, and these are estimates, and they're over 10 years. And so that's important. Context is important, and so often in a TV news story, they're going to say, well, that's going to cost $1.5 trillion. And you'd say, over what period of time? You know, they could have done the same thing for Obamacare and said, oh, this is going to cost $3 trillion, dot, dot, dot.
But let's get to the chase. The coverage, the rabies-infested coverage, focuses on who's going to benefit the most as opposed to how much money will you generate. See, I've looked at this over the years with Kennedy, with Reagan, with Clinton on the capital gains tax cut, and certainly the W cuts. And revenues, money coming into the Treasury, tax dollars coming in, always went up. In all four of those cases, money went up. Revenues went up. Sure, you can still spend more than you take in, or you can spend it unfairly. You know, you can divvy up the pie unfairly, in your opinion, but don't tell me that it's going to cause revenues to go down, because it's not true.
Well, the important line for liberals in the media and everywhere else is that it's always about who's getting the benefit.
Right.
So they're going to say, oh, you know, it's not an unfair benefit, you know, when illegal immigrants are handed food stamps. That to them is a good thing. And for you to protest it would be most inhumane.
Right.
You know, the top 1% of taxpayers pay something like 40% of the taxes. So
in the top 3%
of households, you reduce taxes, who's going to benefit most?
Right. The people that pay the most. I understand that. So it's not really a zero sum, and it's certainly, if you look at percentages, it's a different case. Plus, I had an accountant tell me that if you look at households, because now households are graded equally, the top 3% of households pay the same amount as the bottom 97% of households. So, I mean, certainly in the federal...
Well, and that's the other thing people don't understand, that about half don't pay any income taxes. They may pay FISA.
They pay that, right.
But they end up between the deductions or the earned income tax credit or whatever, they don't actually pay income taxes. And that's something that gets glossed over.
Right.
We won't get a tax cut. Perhaps that's because you're not actually paying any income
tax. It's a net zero for them. I always say, you know, when they complain about defense, I say, well, you don't pay a cent for defense, you know. I mean, but the point of it is, that's true. And so the liberal lefty argument would be, well, you could have given a payroll tax cut, or you could have given bigger refundable credits. You know, that's true. They didn't do that. They didn't do the Bernie Sanders tax reform plan, because some people, as users, don't pay federal income taxes. And let's face it, Tim, you got to make some money to pay federal income taxes, right?
Yeah, and I think this, to some extent, becomes the problem, in that is when you have almost half the people paying no income taxes, then they don't feel the bite.
Right. Yeah. Well, the bite they pay is
a more natural constituency for the Democrats.
Well, of course, I support Tom Pockin of Texas's plan to have a 9% value-added tax and get rid of the corporate share and the payroll and the corporate share of the income tax totally. But, you know, and you, according to his estimate, make enough money to cover the cost of Medicare and Social Security. But nobody's going to do that. Democrats say it's regressive, and Republicans say that it's a shift. Well, guess what? What's more regressive than 99 weeks of unemployment? But that's beyond this conversation. The point of it is, when I turn on the TV, and you do too, it's 98% negative. They want to talk about how Trump's going to make out and how the rich are going to make out. And, you know, nobody talks about, and that's fine to cover that, but nobody talks about what's going to do with the economy, or, you know, whether we're going to move some money back from offshore back here. I mean, that kind of stuff never gets coverage.
Well, Paul Ryan can say it every time he gets on, and that's what he was doing this morning. And I did think it was amusing that Savannah Guthrie, who sat next to a sex harasser for 10 years or something, is saying, do you live in a fantasy world? Well, hello?
She said that to Paul Ryan?
Paul Ryan was too polite to draw attention to her oddity there, but that's not a respectful
incredible.
Question. I don't think Bernie Sanders has ever been asked if he lives in a fantasy.
Well, why doesn't anybody ever say that it brings in more revenue so he can spend more on education? Savannah, don't you want to spend more money on social programs? Well, guess what? We'll generate more money to spend. Then you can argue about how to spend it. But, I mean, just to say you live in fantasy land. Who's that woman at MSNBC that just grilled that liaison today? The bald guy who talks about the legislative agenda, works for the White House? Man, he got grilled today by that woman, one of the women at MSNBC. It wasn't Katie Turr, because I have a crush on her.
Yeah, Stephanie Ruhle?
I think it was Stephanie Ruhle. She was just bloodying, just pounding the liaison, the bald guy.
I call her Stephanie Ruhle, Democrat.
No, not Stephanie Ruhle. No, no, she's in the morning. There was some reporter. It was not her. No, it was somebody else. But I actually, I enjoy Stephanie Ruhle.
Or Hallie Jackson?
I think it was Hallie Jackson. She was pummeling the bald guy that's the liaison to the Congress.
Well, I mean, when you're on MSNBC, this is sort of what's expected.
No, I understand. You know, and ask tough questions. I'm all for that.
Giving the GOP a hard time is what they do.
Well, okay, so here's a question. I don't know how long it'll be before there's a payoff on this. You know, I know people like, the Bloomberg guy, the mayor, says it's a disaster. But, you know, he's got his personal axe to grind. And there's also a point that they'll just buy back stock and they won't do anything with this money. You know, okay, that may happen. But still, there'll be some growth. And if you get $30 more in your paycheck, Valentine's Day, you're going to see it, aren't you, Tim? You're going to see the $30.
I mean, yeah, I mean, certainly people will notice,
right?
If their paycheck goes up, everybody notices.
Yeah, I mean, if you're making a check in your check, if you get like $938, and your next check is $970, you're going to know that, right?
Yeah, you'll notice.
I don't know how you screw somebody out of that. I mean, you got to do your withholding thing or whatever it is. But, I mean, you're going to know that. And what about the debt? What about that? First of all, how many voters vote on the debt? I know the debt's important.
Well, here's the other, and this is the other important thing. I would really like to stress this, Mitch, and that is at the time when Barack Obama, the first 5 years he was president, was running a $1 trillion deficit or more every year, they didn't talk about it.
No, they talked about how much
somehow he wasn't responsible for it, and it really wasn't worth worrying about anyway. The Aaron Burnett's of the world, I remember going on MSNBC and saying, oh, the debt's not a big deal. It's, you know, as a percentage of GDP, it's just not significant.
Yeah, right.
This
yeah.
is, I mean, again, well, or because you have to remember, this is why Trump called it fake news, because even if the facts are factual, it's all spin. It's all Democratic talking points.
Well, a lot of it is, but I could probably find some spin all around the barn. How about Chris Matthews, by the way, revealing there was a settlement on sexual harassment of a producer or something back in the day, 99. He said, inappropriate things? Nobody accused him of having a Matt Lauer playpen, but he said some crude stuff, I guess. Had to settle $40,000.
Well, and I think this is the, you know, we tried to explain, you know, there's obviously gradations of crudity here. Mm-hmm. And people forget this, but, you know, what Anita Hill accused Clarence Thomas of was talking about
saying crude stuff, yeah.
Which is not what Matt Lauer did. It's not
Harvey
Harvey Weinstein did. It's not what Bill Clinton was accused of.
Well, it's
of.
Not what Bill Riley or Roger Ailes did either. So, you know, I had to try to offer balance.
Yeah, no,
Tim.
I'm just saying that it's hard sometimes to figure out, is this true or false? And and you could say, well, Matthews and they settled.
Right.
Which means there was some weight to it. But it might be more of a, for the sum, I think it was $40,000.
Right.
You know, that's
Has Matthews
kind of a,
talked it, about, has he talked about
nuisance
this?
Nuisance money to MSNBC.
Has he talked about this on the air, Matthews?
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it was happening at the time that he was being quite critical of Clinton. So it also might be somebody who was more of a Clinton partisan. That would be this would be the other fascinating thing. Who's the woman? Who is it?
Oh, yeah, right.
And did she have a liberal axe to grind against Matthews at that
point? Oh, sure. Hey, did you hear Joe Scarborough go off the other morning? Because he's talking about the pushback on the FBI and stuff, you know.
Well, this happens most mornings. He D.C.
I mean, he went absolutely ballistic saying there was going to be another Oklahoma City, or they're going to create another Timothy McVeigh. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Well, you can't make fun of Fox News and say these guys are dealing in some sort of wacky conspiracy land and then say Fox News is trying to create the next Timothy McVeigh.
I mean,
it is...
Well, when Rod Rosenstein is questioned, do you know whether the FBI paid for the Christopher Steele dossier? He says, I know, but I can't tell you. I mean, but what is that?
Yeah, not a good answer.
No! Try again.
It's sort of like Roy Moore saying, well, I dated teenagers, but I asked their mother first.
Oh, no! It takes me back to my Waffle House days in college. It was 5'11 redhead. I said, how old are you? She said, 16. I said, oh, my God. I thought she was 19, 20. She goes, oh, that's okay. My parents didn't care when my sister got pregnant. I said, guess what? I care.
Yes.
We're going home.
I've seen National Lampoon.
Are going home right now. My parents care. Anyway, Tim, newsbusters.org. I'm sure that never happened to you in Viroqua. But anyway, hang
on. Oh, no, because everybody knows everybody down to the birth certificate.
Well, I'm sure they do. All right, Tim. There's the little feet there in the corner. Thank you so much, Tim. Appreciate it. Tim Graham. Very nice. I like this bumper music, by the way. I love it. It's a little jazzy action there. We'll come back. Phil Kirpin and your calls on the tax cuts. 210-1667, 210-1667, area code 608. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
Well, we can try to fix it. We'll try to fix it, Mike. Anyway, Phil Kirpin, our guest, American Commitment, years ago was with other free market organizations. Hello, Mr. Kirpin.
Hey, Mitch, how are you?
I'm good. Is it official now? Have they voted on the tax cuts? Did we say it's done? Or
well, it is passed the House and the Senate. The president reportedly is waiting until January 3rd to officially sign it.
Why
is
that?
I'm not sure why.
I thought there was a benefit. I thought there was a benefit if you filed something before the end of the year on the deal, or maybe that's not true.
Well, what I heard, I could be wrong on the exact reasoning for this. What I heard is that if he signs it before the end of the year, then all the companies have to do something for their end-of-the-year accounting that's very complex and difficult versus if he does it right at the beginning of the year, it's easier.
So it's a bookkeeping issue. That makes sense. I mean, there's got to be a reason, right?
Yeah.
Which he'll do probably down at Mar-a-Lago, I would guess, huh?
Well, I don't know. I think or he might do it right when he gets back to town with the big ceremony, or he might, reenact it when he gets back. I don't know exactly how they're going to schedule all that.
Yeah, well, but it's getting pounded. I just talked to Tim Graham of the newsbusters.org, and the coverage is like 98% negative, because they focus on who's going to benefit the most and how much money Trump's going to make out of it and his kids and stuff. Nobody ever says, will tax revenues go down or up? And they always go up. No one. I've challenged my listeners. Give me one time when tax dollars ever went down coming into the Treasury after one of these tax cuts. And no one calls me. They can't find a time.
Well, I'm with you on this. I think that, it's interesting. The Democrats made a big deal out of the analysis that the Joint Committee on Taxation put out. They said the bill is only going to pay for one-third of its static cost, and the rest is going to be added to the deficit. And if you opened up that report, it's incredible. If you opened up that report, it said the assumption of their model was, as soon as the economy starts growing more quickly, the Federal Reserve will jack up interest rates and stop it in its tracks, and that's why it only pays for a third of its cost. The Fed had already said in public testimony they aren't going to do that, and frankly, between us, the Fed doesn't have the power to raise interest rates that much if the market isn't moving that way. I mean, they like to think they do, but they don't. The world is awash in liquidity. We're in a very low interest rate era. That's not about to change anytime soon, and so they make very unrealistic assumptions to get the report that was sort of the official dynamic score, and even with those extraordinarily unrealistic assumptions, they still had it paying for a third of its cost.
Well, that's right. And, of course, I think Karl Rove, people hate him, obviously, but he said that on the 2003 tax cuts, the CBO underestimated growth by two-thirds. they were off by 70%.
That was the 2003 was a very successful one, similar in some respects to this new one, because the centerpiece of the 2003 bill was the capital gains and dividend cut, and we had a big booming increase in capital formation.
Well, wasn't the 2001 tax cut deferred until 2003?
The 2001 was very poorly designed, in my judgment.
Okay.
It had these long phase-ins, and it didn't do anything really for capital.
So really, the 2003
sort of accelerated it, and that's when the economy took off.
Well, and then people want to blame the tax cuts for the meltdown, which to me they were so totally separate, the mortgage meltdown.
Yeah, that was other stupid Bush administration policies, the idea that everyone ought to own a house regardless of their credit.
Yeah, the ownership society, right? I mean, that was a big mistake, wasn't it, being in the business at the time?
Well, it was a good idea conceptually, but, you needed people to actually be at a point where they could afford it, not just to push them into houses they couldn't afford. It got totally out of control.
Yeah. Well, there were attempts to reform Fannie and Freddie, but they didn't survive a filibuster. Anyway, of course, at that time, the second leading recipient of Fannie Mae contributions was Senator Obama. Actually, Robert Bennett was third of Utah, but first was Chris Dodd.
Chris Dodd of Connecticut was probably up there, and I think Byron Dorgan of North Dakota. They both got those special sweetheart loans from Countrywide.
Yeah. But, of course, that's when Acorn blocked the path of the bank, and then a young Counselor Obama had represented them. No, that's going back off the point. But now we have this deal where if you pay percentage-wise higher, even though you pay absolute dollars less, which is true. I mean, Warren Buffett could play 2%. He'd still pay more than me in real dollars. I know you probably make more than that. But, so people consume themselves in the press will with fairness. It's all about fairness. Even though they don't mention that the rich pay more, and that 97% of households pay the same amount as the top 3% of households. Nope,
Yeah, they're really obsessed with distribution tables. And, the remarkable thing about the design of this bill compared to the way the coverage has been is this bill is really designed for the benefits on the individual side. There are also, substantial business tax cuts. But on the individual side, the bill is really designed so that the benefits go mostly to the middle class and down, because the centerpiece of the bill is the expanded standard deduction.
So on a percentage basis you're talking about here.
Right, correct.
Yeah, but who's going to say that the middle class or working class should get more in absolute dollars?
Well, it's impossible.
I mean, it's not going to happen. It's insane.
You can't do it. But the thing is, and this is, I think it's important for people to understand this who might be seeing headlines or being misled or don't understand kind of the basic structure of this thing. If you make under $74,000 as a married couple, the highest rate you see under this plan is 12%, and you only see that above a $24,000 standard deduction. That's a pretty significant cut. And then, you've also got the child credit expansion up to $2,000 per child. And so this is a very sort of bottom-weighted plan, and it's got these major fixed dollar benefits in terms of the larger standard deduction and the larger child credit.
Yeah.
And if people want to know exactly how this affects them, there's a real good website. It's not mine. I'm plugging a website that's not mine, but it's really well done. Taxplancalculator.com. It's like three or four questions.
Oh, yeah? Tax Plan Calculator. Yeah. We're talking to Phil Kirp on America's Commitment on the Tax Cuts. 210-1667, 210-1667. Now, you could do a Bernie Sanders-style tax cut if you wanted and do a payroll tax cut and give like a big refundable credit like the earned income tax credit and expand it. But they're not going to do that. I mean, that's not going to happen unless you – the Democrats wouldn't do it either probably unless you elected more far-left members.
This bill does expand the refundable portion of the child credit.
Right,
so
by
the
first
people
year.
People who pay no income tax can still get up to $1,400 per child of the expanded child credit. And so even non-income taxpayers, if they have minor children, will get a tax cut from that. And sort of conceptually, they say that that is a...
Similar type of deal, yeah. Yeah, because I know Mac's wife made off every spring on the earned income tax credit back in the day. She would go to the islands or something. It was really a cool deal. But in any event, yeah, and so that's what it is now. We're trying to outmaneuver each other on what we can give away in that regard. But hey, that's the politics of today, right, Phil?
Well, the amazing thing to me is that they've got this big expansion in the child credit, including the refundable portion, this big increase in the standard deduction, so the dollar amounts of benefits are pretty high for taxpayers on the low end, and yet the Democrats and the media say tax cuts for the rich, it's only for the rich, and you know, it's almost like they're going to say that no matter what, any bill that cuts taxes for everyone, that's what they're going to say, unless you come in and raise taxes at the top the way the Democrats like to, they're just going to go to the well with those same political attacks no matter what.
All right, well, here's the other question, though. I mean, will there be capital coming back from offshore? Will companies hire more people or raise, because there's the fear that they'll just buy back stock and they'll just take care of the shareholders. And I mean, you had Bloomberg say it was a sham, right?
So far today, we've seen end of the year bonuses and or raises from several major employers, Comcast Universal, AT&T, several banks, Wells Fargo, Fifth Third Bank Corp, Washington Federal. A lot of them are announcing that they're having across-the-board wage increases. Several of those banks said they're going to bring up their lowest-wage employees to at least $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. Several of these companies said they're giving every single U.S. employee a $1,000 bonus here ahead of the holiday. And they've also been some big announcements in terms of increased capital investment. So it's just a handful of companies, and it's just the first day.
Well, yeah.
But it does seem that for whatever reason, either because the economic fundamentals say it now makes sense for them to do this, and or because they want to look good politically when Democrats are claiming they're not going to do this, whatever their motivation is, we have seen at least several major U.S. employers, Boeing, a similar announcement.
Oh, yeah, good.
We have seen several major U.S. employers already announce increases in compensation.
Remember TARP when they gave those bonuses after TARP? I mean, that was like brazen.
Well, that was for executives. These are frontline workers for the most part.
Right,
they
learned
their lesson on not doing that.
They're giving executive bonuses. I mean, that was really...
So that was unreal, right after we gave them like a fortune and bailout.
I know. Oh, man. But this time it sounds like they're going a little lower in the totem pole, which is good, you know. Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see how much money comes back from overseas. You know, that's.
I think it's going to be considerable. You know, there are about $3 trillion in the offshore subsidiaries of U.S. multinationals right now.
Yeah.
And the way the tax code was written before, if you brought it back to the U.S., you'd be hit with the full 35% tax. So everyone was just sort of reinvesting in a broader
hole. So that's out, right?
Their subsidiaries. Yeah. Well, what they've done instead is called the deemed repatriation. They've basically said, we're going to put an immediate one-time tax on all that offshore money. You got to pay it whether you bring the money back or not.
Right.
And since you got to pay it whether you bring the money back or not, the theory is they might as well bring it back.
Might as well bring it back.
Good opportunities here in the U.S.
Isn't that what Manafort was trying to say? Hey, I was working in Ukraine as a consultant, and I was following their laws, and I put my money in whatever bank I want in Greece. But then somebody said, well, yeah, but you still have to pay taxes in America. They might get him on evasion, I guess, like Al Capone.
It seems like they're going to get him on something.
Yeah, he was living dangerously, I think, for a long time. Well, we'll see, because if growth is what they're saying, 4% they expect, right?
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to be near 4% for this current quarter because it was, you know, it was 3.3 last quarter with all those hurricanes hitting.
What will the annualized rate? What will the annualized growth rate be? Because the first quarter was bad. So
yeah, I don't know what it's going to be for the full year. Probably be around 3%.
That'd be a big. I mean, we never had 3%.
Psychologically, that would be a big deal because we haven't had that.
We never had that for one full year under President Obama. So. But, you know, talk about GDP growth, though, fell to the average person on the street. Their eyes roll over.
They don't care. If it doesn't increase their wages, they're not going to care. I mean, that's going to be the real test of this at the end of the day is whether people see higher wages. And, you know, we're only on day one, but there's some good indicators that is going to happen.
Well, it's certainly an exciting victory for the president and the members of Congress. Whether it pays off and they all get beat or not, we don't know yet. But they did get something hard passed. I was kind of surprised that Corker... And did Flake vote for it?
Every Republican voted for it. John McCain missed the vote because he's in Arizona.
Right. So it's 51-48. Yeah.
From what I heard, the reason Corker changed his vote was McCain asked him as a favor, would you vote for this bill because I don't want the outcome to be in doubt and, you know, my health is such that I would really like to go back to Arizona and recover for the next few weeks. And so I don't know that Corker... honestly changed his mind. I know he put out a statement that kind of said, I've changed my mind, but my sense from people I've talked to here in town is that it was more of a personal favor to John McCain so that he didn't have to worry about going back to Arizona than anything else on Corker's
part. Well, and Corker was running a deficit. Doesn't he know the history of revenue growth? I guess he's worried they'll spend it, but that's beside
the point. Yeah, he was really, really over-concerned with these deficit projections, especially when that joint tax report came out that said it was only going to pay for a third of the cost. And I was trying to get someone to point to him in the report where it said as soon as there's growth, the Fed will stamp it out because that assumption was so crazy. But for whatever reason, he was sort of hung up on the idea that that report was the final word on what the growth impact is going to be and that the revenues weren't going to come in. But I agree with you. I think even the best estimates are going to be exceeded when we actually see the way the economy
reacts. Oh, yeah? Okay. What about the other stuff? I know you're into the money thing, but... are they going to do other things on the agenda here, health care, next year?
Well, you know, they did get the individual mandate repealed in this bill. And so if the Trump administration can deliver on some of the regulatory stuff they had in that executive order in October and bring back non-Obamacare plans, either through associations or maybe through short-term limited duration, we could potentially see an escape hatch for Obamacare even without more legislation. The challenge on legislation is going to be with the new Democrat being seated from Alabama, the margin's even tighter, and you've got at least a couple of pro-choice Republicans in Murkowski and Collins, which means you probably can't include the Planned Parenthood defunding, but if you take that out, do the social conservative groups walk? And so there's some real questions on whether they could actually do a health care bill next year.
Hey, isn't it true that if you can't get some Democrats to work with you, forget about health care. It's not going to happen.
Well, it's going to be very, very hard, as we learned. And I think as Democrats learned, because they did Obamacare with no Republicans, and they've paid an enormous price for that. So it would be nice if they could find a way to do it in a bipartisan fashion, but it's such a poisonous, polarized environment.
You don't worry about the premiums going up because of this?
I think the premiums have already skyrocketed to the point that if people don't have employer coverage and they don't qualify for the subsidies...
You're screwed either way.
You can't afford it. Now, the estimates are from CBO that without the mandate, you're looking at about a 10% increase over the, you know, they've already more than doubled. Now, another 10%, that's terrible. I'm not going to say that's nothing. It's significant. But I do believe that they're going to pass some version of Susan Collins legislation to do reinsurance to prevent that increase.
Yeah, but you save on the penalties, so it's like $700. Yeah, I guess you're a net loser if they go by 10%, though, on that.
Well, the big thing with the penalty is that, if people do go without insurance or if they buy non-Obamacare insurance, they're not going to also have to pay the penalty on top of that. So that I think, opens up the pathway for some of the things the Trump administration's already announced on the deregulatory side. So if they bring back some of these limited insurance products and sort of the less expensive things that were prohibited by the Obama administration, those would basically be useless. If you bought them, you'd still have to pay this hefty penalty tax. Now that Congress has repealed the penalty tax, those products, I think, become much more usable and viable.
All right, Phil Kirpin, always good talking to you. American Commitment. What's the website?
AmericanCommitment.org.
All right, AmericanCommitment.org. Always good to have a commitment in there. Yeah. Thank you, Phil. Enjoy the Beltway.
Have a good one.
All right, take care. Taxes, poor people, the only thing that's going to matter is if wages go up. But this business about the deficit going up, it just irks me. Because the deficit goes up when you spend too much. Now, if you said it's going to cause revenues to go down, you'd be wrong. With Reagan's tax cuts, revenues doubled. I know that inflation would have changed that percentage-wise fact. But revenues did, in fact, nominally, revenues doubled during the 80s. But to be intellectually honest, wouldn't you say that tax cuts would have caused revenues to go down? Wouldn't that have caused? But see, what happens is my friends tell me, oh, that's not cause and effect. There's no cause and effect. Well, there is cause and effect, then, you believe. If you raise the rates, you'll bring more money. Isn't that cause and effect? You believe that's cause and effect. But again, it's all about fairness. But if you're paying, you know, a huge tax contribution because you make more money, you're going to get more in the cut because you make more money. Now, but if you don't do the rich in the tax cut, then you will have them staying overseas, putting their money in the Caymans. I mean, I don't get it. We're in a capitalist country. If you're going to chase money offshore, which we've done over the years, how is that helping anybody? How does that help? I know you want to say screw the rich and give everybody in the middle class and below a big cut, a big refundable credit or, you know, payroll tax cut, whatever, and you think they'll go out and, you know, you and I will go out and spend that on a new car. But you know what? It's like when they had the $800 first-time homebuyer tax credit, or it was $8,000. It ended when it ended. I mean, you can't do those temporary things. You know, you want to try to make the economic ground more fertile so things happen over a long period of time. And then you and I might have the same spending agenda. Oh, Mitch, you're that conservative guy on there. Well, no, you and I may have the same spending agenda. I'd love to spend money on mentor programs and after-school programs and all kinds of stuff. But you got to have the money. The average GDP growth under Obama was 1.8% over 8 years. The last two quarters were over 3%. They're saying we might be close to 4% in the fourth quarter. That means there's more money coming in. That means the tax base is bigger. More people are paying taxes. You have more taxpayers. And guess what? There are more people in the middle class than the rich. What do we have, like 600 billionaires in the country? It's about 600. We talk about billionaires a lot, but there aren't that many. I mean, you could get them in the band section, the student section, in the call center, and they wouldn't even fill up half. So, you know, the money, go where the money is my point. You know, nobody cares. I understand. Some people do care. You say the injustice, and they're going to cut. I paid that penalty before with health care, and, you know, I paid $700. And, you know, if you like Phil said, if you don't get a subsidy and you don't work for somebody else, you don't work for a bigger employer, you know, if you're a small business person and you're not getting a subsidy, you're paying through the nose, whether it goes up 10% or not. So what you're hoping is that you can get some more leverage, shop around for a better deal. You know, nothing's easy, right? I mean, everything can go wrong, it will. By the way, I don't know if you had a chance to hear this, but we did a podcast about a week ago. And Eva Kaur was our guest. Eva Kaur is a Holocaust survivor. She was a victim of experimentation at Auschwitz by Dr. Joseph Mengele and his staff. The angel of death, Dr. Joseph Mengele. And Eva was probably 9 years old at the time. Her sister Miriam, they were experimenting. Miriam died several years ago because of things Dr. Mengele did. So Eva's still alive. She's like 90. And she was on our podcast on MadisonTalks.com. We did an advertisement all over the country on Facebook, along with Dr. Robert Enright, who's the co-chair of the International Forgiveness Institute. And Dr. Enright goes around the country talking about forgiveness and the life skills that provides and, you know, mediating disputes in Northern Ireland and the Middle East and elsewhere. He's been all over the world. And Eva Kaur, in this podcast, I hope you go to it. We have the long version. We're going to be posting a short highlight version tonight. She actually forgave her Nazi captors. I'm not saying you should do that or Nazis should be forgiven, but she did. She said it was because she didn't want to be a victim her whole life and that she wanted to control her future. She couldn't control the past. And that she said, if you forgive the people that don't do anything for you, it's not reconciliation, because reconciliation takes two. But she went to Auschwitz with a doctor who had worked at Auschwitz for Mengele. And he went with her and talked to her and so forth. And, you know, I'm sure he expressed his regret or whatever the case, but she did her little amnesty thing. And I'm thinking, if I can't forgive friends or screwed me over, or ex-family members or whatever, and she could forgive her captors at Auschwitz, I'm thinking, man, if she can do that, why can't I do it, you know? I'm still holding a grudge against Ted Valentine for his officiating in the 1992 Final Four. That's really not healthy. So you carry all that stuff with you, and you carry stuff from past work or family or friend issues, you know, being screwed over in one way or another. You carry that stuff around. And then you're really controlled by that. Those people that you have on your list control you. And you don't take ownership of your future. You don't even take ownership of your present. And it's one of those the most inspiring interviews I ever did with two guests, great guests, Eva Kaur and Dr. Robert Enright. It's called The Power of Forgiveness. You can go to MadisonTalks.com and click onto the podcast. But it was just inspiring stuff. And even if the people that you want to, you can't forgive them because they won't. See, what people want is that you want the people who screwed you over to apologize to you. You want them to apologize. And sometimes they won't. They don't. But if you just forgive them, don't forget what they did, but just forgive them and move on. Hard to do. But it only takes one. That takes just you. You don't have to wait for them. And if they don't do it, because they were insecure, they were jealous, they were fearful of your superior knowledge or whatever the case, you just say, well, that's the way it goes. And I'm not going to let them occupy my thoughts. I'm not going to let them occupy my emotions. I'm not going to get angry thinking about it, because you know what? They have power over you at that point. So again, it was inspiring. I've had people talk about it. I sent it out to people. It's Eva Kaur, a Holocaust survivor, with Dr. Robert Enright of the International Forgiveness Institute. Now, coming up, MadisonTalks.com. Go to MadisonTalks.com and click the link. We've got coming up Voices from the Bayou after 7 o'clock. Four people. We'll talk about this. They're African-Americans, and we're talking the country about getting along, white, black. You know, how racist are we? We don't want to think we're racist like we were back in the day. We're still, the country still has racists. But we'll talk about it. They experienced racism, they say, and also during the hurricane. And we'll try to get to the bottom of what we have to do to get along. We don't want to think we're racist. I'm not racist. Are you? But some people will point things out to us that we should hear. Voices from the Bayou coming up. The number to call is 210-1667, 210-1667, area code 608. Also, you know what's coming up at 7:30? And I'm so happy to say this. Phil Dawson. Phil Dawson, who was a sportscaster at WIBA and had a sudden departure from that organization. I'm not sure what he can say on the air. We're going to talk to him. We'll catch up on some of the sports stuff and life stuff. We share a passion for Frank Sinatra. That'll be fun. Phil Dawson at 7:30. But Voices from the Bayou coming up. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.